we all know that we live in a very contentious era, or divided. People argue about just about everything. And one of the things people argue about is education. What's the best way to educate our young people? Recently, I've seen a number of articles and documents about this argument, and part of the reason why it's difficult is because the modern idea is that there's no real basis in reality. You can't really know what's right and wrong, can't really know what's true or what's best. You just have to decide for yourself. That's how people think. So if that's the case, well, then there's no basis for deciding what's the best way to educate. You just choose what you think is the best, and you impose it on the young people. The more traditional and proper way of thinking about education is that there is such a thing as reality, there is such a thing as right and wrong, true and false, and the idea is to help people recognize what's true, what's right, help them to think properly, and help them to make decisions that are in accord with the right way of living. But if there isn't any way of knowing what's right and wrong, well, then you just come up with an ideology and you push that on the next generation. Now, this might sound like it has nothing to do with today's readings, but it was in the back of my mind when I picked up these readings, and there is this striking comparison between King David in the first reading and King Herod in the Gospel. Both of them are kings, but they're quite different in their character. And so I thought, well, how do they get to be so different? And what came to my mind was, well, they were raised differently. Their whole training from their earliest years is different. We've been following the story of David for a couple of weeks here. David, we know, started out as a shepherd boy. He didn't come from a powerful family, came from a, at best, middle-class family, but hard-working people, and he was assigned, because he was the youngest, to take care of the flocks. So he learned as a young boy the basics of what's the right way to raise sheep, how to defend them from animals, and how to take responsibility for the charge that's been entrusted to you. David also had a great respect for the Lord. He knew that you do what God wants, you don't do what you want, and you put your trust in the strength that comes from God. So when he had this opportunity to fight the giant, Goliath, he said, well, this giant is insulting not just the king and his people, he's insulting God himself, and that's wrong. Remember what he said to Goliath? You coming against me with your sword, I'm coming against you with the power of God. And that's why David won that contest with Goliath. So David, even from his earliest years, knew some very basic things. Responsibility, hard work, and most of all, respect for God. David was also chosen by God. God chose him, anointed him to be the king at a time when the kingship was very new in Israel. They didn't have a king before Saul, remember? And when Saul fell away, David was not Saul's son. He was raised up by God. Now, we also know, because it was just in the reading 1 week ago, that David fell terribly. He committed adultery. He took the wife of another man as his own, the wife of Uriah, Bathsheba. He was drunk with power, you could say. He got filled with his own sense that he could do whatever he wanted because he's the king, and he fell terribly. Remember, though, what happened when he was confronted with his sin. Nathan said, look what you have done. David said, I have sinned. I've sinned against the Lord. David did not insist that because he was king, he could decide what was right and wrong. When the truth was set before him, he bowed down, he acknowledged that there was something true and he himself had not followed it. It was possible because he knew the difference between right and wrong. So that's King David, and in today's first reading, he is praised, and rightly praised, for his good life. Even though he fell, he repented. He trusted in the mercy of God, and his heart was genuinely for the Lord. He served the Lord. I don't know if in our times anybody would want to be compared to choice fat, but in this reading, it says that David was like choice fat. And that was a big compliment. Don't read this to your children. They'll think it's just funny. But anyway, David is an example of a very good man and a very good king. Now, in contrast, we have King Herod. This is not Herod the Great. This is Herod the Great's son, Herod the Tetrarch, they call him, or Herod Antipas. So he was born into a political family, say a dynasty, political dynasty. His father was a very ambitious, very clever politician. He was not anointed king. He pretty much fought his way into the kingship, Herod the Great I'm talking about, and he was very jealous about holding on to power. Herod the Great, remember, when he heard that a new king was born in Bethlehem, ordered that all the children be killed. Anyone under two, any boy under 2 years old, kill them all. I'm not going to let anybody take my throne. That was Herod the Great. Now, and we also know, and it's historically verified, he had some of his own children killed because he thought they were threatening his power. They say the joke in Rome was, you're better off being one of Herod's pigs than one of his sons. I don't know if that's the Caesars. And the, part of the joke was because the Jews didn't eat pork, so if you're a pig, they're not going to kill you. But if you're one of Herod's sons, you're not going to make it. Now, Herod Antipas, the Herod that's in today's gospel, he survived. He survived, and he was given... He was appointed the king of Galilee. Now, in these days, the kingship was not guaranteed by being son of a king, and it was not bestowed because God anointed you. It was because Rome knew that it was good to have some local leaders in charge. So it was all up to the emperors who was going to sit on the throne. It was more like a political appointee. That's what Herod here is. And we can tell from this reading and from everything we know about Herod the Tetrarch that he never really grew up. He never grew up. He was born into a family of political ambition, and what he learned was maneuver. Do whatever you think will be best for you. Make yourself the law. So that was his education. He saw his father manipulating and maneuvering and scheming. And so he said, well, that's how it works. That's what you do. There's no conforming yourself to a higher law. You're the law. And you decide what you want. That's why I said in the modern argument about education is something like the argument between David and Herod. David, even though he was weak, he had a temper, he had his own desires, he knew that there was a higher law and that the best way to live was to conform yourself, discipline yourself to follow that law. Herod, all he knew was that whoever has the most power determines the law. And since he became king, he determined for himself what the law was. Along comes John the Baptist, who does not follow the determined law of King Herod. He speaks out on the basis of another law, and he even says it here. It is not lawful for you to have your brother's wife. John judges Herod, not because he's judgmental, but because he is basing that judgment on the law of God. And that's the right way to judge. Herod was doing something gravely wrong. Now, Herod's case is quite complicated because Herodias was the wife of his brother. But Herodias was also the daughter of another brother. So Herodias was actually Herod's niece. And it gets more complicated than that. If you look into the family story of the Herods and their different liaisons and children, and it's very, very complicated. But in any case, you can see that Herod was in what we would call now a severely dysfunctional family. He marries his brother's wife, even though he had a wife of his own, and that woman, Herodias, was also his niece. You can see he doesn't follow the law of God, he just does what he wants, which is what children do. Someone who has not been properly trained, has not been educated. Okay, so here he is. He's got John in prison, partly to shut him up, and partly because there's something new about this guy, John, and what he says is different. I mean, he talks as if there's something. There's some other basis for making decisions. There's a moral basis, and Herod can't quite shake that idea. That's because he has a conscience. It's an immature conscience, it's not trained, but it's still existing somewhere inside. John's in prison. Herod, drunk with power. That's how power affects us. And we saw it happen to David, now it happens to Herod. But the difference is, Herod doesn't have any defense. He doesn't have any basis to decide whether what's right and wrong. So he makes this stupid oath to the girl, who is, in some legal sense, his own daughter, but really is the daughter of his wife, his brother's wife. And I don't think she's the daughter of Philip either. I think she's the daughter of some other man. No. So I tell you, it's complicated. But anyway, Herod makes this stupid oath, I'll give you half my kingdom if you want, which of course he wouldn't do, but that's what he said. And then when the girl comes and says, I want the head of John the Baptist on a platter, what basis does Herod have for making a decision what to do? He's never been trained properly. He doesn't know that you don't do what's wrong no matter what anyone thinks of it. You don't keep a promise that you shouldn't have made in the first place. Even a child would know this if a child was trained properly. There is such a thing as a rash oath, and you're not obliged to keep a promise that you shouldn't have made. Better off to take the humiliation of saying, I should never have said that, I'm sorry. You don't have to save face in front of the people who heard you speak. There's a higher standard that says, no, better to admit that you were wrong and say, I shouldn't have said that, and take the humiliation. But since Herod doesn't know that, or at least he doesn't acknowledge that standard, he thinks, oh, well, I'm better off pleasing my wife, pleasing her daughter, pleasing my guests, and having John killed, than doing what's right. So he makes, after making a foolish oath, he makes an evil decision. It's one thing to be stupid. It's one thing to be drunk. It's another thing to make an evil decision, to make a decision that is directly opposed to the will of God. And that's what Herod does. Have an innocent man killed at the request of a girl. Okay, well, this is the contrast set before us. We are all children of God, and he is training us, he's educating us to follow his way. Not because he's imposing his will on us or his ideology on us, but because his way is what leads to our greatest happiness, leads to our maturity, our fulfillment, our wholeness, That's what a good education does. It makes us mature and possible. It makes it possible for us to live a happy life. This is what God is doing for us. Now, because we're children, we sometimes make stupid mistakes and we sometimes make evil decisions, like David did. But we know, because we know the mercy of God, it's possible for us to turn away from our sin, to repent and come back to the right way. So that's what we learn from David. We learn in a negative way from Herod that not to go that way of catering to one's own flesh all the time. The flesh has to be disciplined. Okay, so we turn to God. We see the wisdom in submitting ourselves to His law, to the truth, the right way to live. That's what's not just because it's an honor of God, but because it's also what's good for us and good for all those whom we love.